Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started in a few minutes, a couple minutes here. Thanks for coming. Have a seat and we'll get going in 2 or 3 minutes. Thanks. So can everyone come up so we can have a group picture this morning? No. He's going to make his stand and sit. Photographer's always the one in charge, I've learned. That's what I've learned. Good morning, everyone. I am Peter Gianetti. I am the editor-in-chief of Homepage News, which is the B2B trade publication that I hope all of you are receiving. And if not, go to homepagenews.com and make sure you are subscribing. We have daily show dailies coming out during the show, and the reason I'm telling you that is because Homepage News had a unique opportunity last year. But before we get into that opportunity, I want everyone to raise their hand if they think they have an idea of what trend is. Okay, now each one of you could come up and explain what that idea is, but the point we think of this session today is to give you a sense from our perspective of what trend is. So a year ago, Homepage News, in collaboration with Tom Mirabli over to my left here of Springboard Futures and Don Evans of the International Housewares Association, we came up with an idea called Insight. And what it was an effort to see the world of housewares. And Tom and his team traveled, and they'll get into this a little bit more. Tom and his team traveled to trade shows across the world, in the United States, in Europe, and beyond, with the goal of looking at product and trying to identify trend as it relates to the product we're seeing, but also try to position the product we're seeing into trend. And trend is a lot. It's not just the style, it's how it's made, it's the look. It's how it fits within a lifestyle, and it is lifestyle. And you'll see from their presentation today how we presented many lifestyle trends, and we used real product that we're seeing at trade shows to sort of give you a look into the future of where these trends are headed. We published it in 9 portfolios, beginning, when did we start doing this last year?
June,
and they went through the fall. And then we redistributed it once we had all 9 portfolios so you could see it. I'm going to encourage you at some point after this presentation, go to homepagenews.com, search for Insight, and you'll get a close look at the portfolios. They're very extensive. They're like digital flip books. And we think when you see them all together, you get a good idea of where this industry is with regard to helping retailers and suppliers, or in the other order, suppliers and retailers understand what the consumer is looking for and how to present their products in that context. Mostly what we're here to do today is give you a preview of the second generation, the second edition of Insight for 25. And that will begin rolling out on homepage news sometime later this spring. And we think we learned a lot from the first insight. Dawn and Tom are actually gonna take us kind of through a little recap of what we did last year, and then they're gonna give us a little sneak peek of what's coming this year. And we hope by the end of this presentation, you're maybe further along than you even know with regard to what your idea of trend is. It means a lot to different people, and we're trying to give it some universality, some way of seeing trend in the context of what's going on in the product. With that, again, I wanna introduce Dawn Evans to my left. Dawn is the Director of Marketing for the International Housewares Association, and she was kind of the creative brain behind pulling this together in the 9 portfolios, working very closely with Tom to present something that was very meaningful to the industry. And Tom is our author of Insight. Tom and his team, as I said earlier, were throughout the world of trade shows in the home and housewares space, seeing things that maybe you never got a chance to see and help putting that and curating. We use the word curate a lot. I think it gets overused, but we think this is special because it was such a dedicated curation with regard to the trends that we're talking about. So I'm gonna turn it over to them to get started with today's presentation. You might hear from me a little bit during the presentation because I can't keep my mouth shut, but I like to sort of see where we're headed sometimes. Maybe I'll turn the conversation in a certain way. So thanks very much for attending, and let's get rolling.
Thanks, Peter. I think we can guarantee that you're going to interject.
That's funny.
Hi, everyone. Welcome, and thanks for joining us first thing this morning on the second day of the show. We're all very excited. Hopefully, this is going to be a very energetic day for everyone. So, moving into a quick overview of the agenda before we kind of get into defining trend and going through some of our portfolios, we are going to define trend, or at least to Peter's point, how we have defined it in terms of working with resources and all of our expert industry leaders that we work with, which leads us to the expert perspectives that we reached out to and have used as a guide really in creating this. Consumer insights, as well as the trend portfolio overview, we are going to be looking at the first instance of insight and then how it goes into the future, and some Q&A should we have some time at the end. So without further ado, I'm going to actually turn it over to my friend Tom to help us understand what trend is and what it isn't.
You know, it's funny, and I apologize for my voice in advance, but I talk even more than Peter probably, so. During the pandemic, it was really funny because there was a lot of talk about, does trend even exist anymore? Like, is it even important? It doesn't matter. Is it possible to even talk about trend when we're worrying about our lives? And it really illustrated the fact that a lot of people don't understand sort of where trend comes from or even what it is. Because I think we look back and when we think we know what trend is, a lot of times we're talking about sort of somebody looking into a crystal ball and making predictions that we don't know how they do it, but they're always right and all these other things. And it's absolutely not that. Trend is not about what you think. It's not about trend. It's a foreseeable future that's based on on looking at a lot of different things and predicting a lot of other things. So what we did was the first thing we start with that we always start with is sort of who you're selling to. And one of the things that we like to keep in people's mind and update constantly is back that up for a sec. Who's out there? Who's in the market for home, for housewares, and for everything? So we look at different generations. What percentage of the population they are? What's their? It seems like you're on auto. What percentage of the population are they? Hit pause. And what percentage of the population are they? What is their average household spending? You know, what percentage of them own a home, and who is renting versus who is buying, because all of those things affect the way they spend and what they spend on. You know, we talked about yesterday. I'm sorry, let me just.
Excuse folks, if you bear with us for a second, we're just working through a technical issue. We'll have it sorted out in a minute. Sorry, we don't want to get too far ahead.
Yep. Thanks. Stop it though. From animating.
There you go.
You're glad it wasn't me because I would have had to call my daughters and that's not gonna.
So you have to stop.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna end the show and just run it.
Hold on.
We're getting there. But as we, as she goes through that, that trial, you know, I mean, the way people spend is different. The way, if you own a home, we know that when people own a home, the things that they spend on are different. We know that even though Gen Z does not have a tremendous amount of disposable income, their influence is immense. So all of these things affect, you know, so they're influencing boomers who right now still have the largest amount of disposable income, the least amount of debt. All of these things, sort of, when you keep those at the front of your mind, you even though at this top you're looking at the percentage of the population and it seems to be evening out, when you have to keep in mind where your industry sits. For example, 75 and over, right now they only spend about 3% of their disposable income on the home and housewares industry. So, you know, and boomers as a group, again, lots less debt. And also just down at the bottom, looking at what they're defined by. One of the things that we talked about yesterday when we were doing the value equation index, which is something that I hope you all get the chance to see, is a lot of generations purchase by, you know, what's defining them. If you look at Gen Z, originally we've been saying that they were defined by social media and they're really known for mobility. Well, the mobility thing has stayed the same, but really what's happening is that we're looking at this generation really being defined more by the socioeconomic crisis, a lack of stability, and so they're going to turn into the next generation that is probably the most financially unstable and insecure that we've dealt with.
Tom and Dawn, one of the themes you're going to hear, we're going to show you a lot of different things, and this slide is a good place to start. It's incumbent upon the suppliers and the retailers to know, not just understand these elements, but to know who they are targeting. Not all trends that you hear today are going to be for every retailer or every supplier. You may feel that you're more aligned to a certain generation. You need to understand all the generation scope, but know who you are, know what you want to accomplish, and then you can start to integrate these ideas into the mix that you that you have. You agree with that, Tom?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a lot. One of the things we said yesterday was a lot of the problems with retail right now, especially when you look at independents, is really consider not just who you are, but who you want to be, and always think about who you're selling to and who you have the opportunity to sell to. We see a lot of independents that have absolutely beautiful assortments that are totally inappropriate for success in the neighborhoods that they're in or in this, you know, and so you see great assortments and a lot of times you walk down the street, you've all got that store that you look at and they seem like they haven't decided yet. It's like they're trying to be everything to everybody. So always, you know, make sure.
Let's take a look at how this all sort of comes to play.
Trend curves. I just want to spend a second on trend curves because they're so important, and a lot of people don't understand them, and they really are at the core of what trend is. So if you look at saleability is along the left, and the calendar is across the long axis. But there are four different kinds of trends if we really bring it down, and one is seasonal. So seasonal trends, which is the blue line, they are like Easter, okay? They happen every year, they're recurring, and they have a very specific wave to them. They're up, they're down. Then a seasonal non-recurring, like a summer trend that is about prints or something like that, that happens once. Again, it spikes, that's the red spike, okay? So it happens fast and short, and then it's done. Core trends, durable trends that are long-term, that's the pink one. Think mid-century modern. It develops over a period of time and it tends to last a long time and you can buy into it for a long time. And then there's fashion. Like think of something like 80s trend where it develops a little bit faster and then it goes a little bit longer. But when you know what the way a trend, when you can identify what kind of a trend the trend you're buying to is, or the trend you want to present to your retailers is, whether it's your retailers or your consumers, it really helps you kind of put the right assortment together, you know.
We rely on experts. These decisions and these ideas and the things we do don't done in a vacuum. It's not just sitting in a coffee shop talking about what's new. Talk a little bit about what the experts know.
Trend is not about just about color and style, and I think it's a mistake that a lot of people make. It's about consumer lifestyles. How are they living? How do they want to live? It's about the retail landscape. You know, when you look at trends, you can see a great trend, but it may not be appropriate if you're an online business. You have to know, how are people buying now? How are people selling now? and how can your product work into that? And you know, again, with, regardless of what you're on, technology. How is technology, like when we get into social selling and we start looking at that, it's a completely different way of selling. So making sure that you understand what the current technology is. And very important, the socioeconomic environment. It sounds like a very broad thing, and in a way it is, but one of the things that we were seeing this year, we saw a lot of shifts in what was part of the value equation, and one of the things that we saw was people were buying to political values. So there, you know, we saw about a, you know, about a 50% increase in how people were making decisions of whether or not they were going to buy based on whether or not they were engaged with the political and social stance of the company they were buying from.
Yeah, not to underplay the marketing trends as well. I mean, we've talked a lot about style, you know, and how a lot of people define trend, but a lot of, you know, when you think of marketing trends and what's going to define, you know, think of Barbie, think of everything that's kind of happened that's sort of either really short-lived or longer-lived, you can base, you know, a lot of retailers might take a look at a trend that they might not think is for their customer, but maybe they can use marketing in a way to bring that trend into that product line without having to shift their entire product line to do so.
And marketing today is a direct line to the end user. And that's an important part of the strategy right now. You can talk to your end user. You're not, you know, you want to, you get, the retailers need to understand, the suppliers need to understand, but it's really coming directly from the consumer. And more of what we're doing with this project and what we think the industry needs to do is to have that direct connection with the consumer. That doesn't mean everything has to go D2C from a business standpoint. You should, you can go through the normal channels, but that armed with that type of insight, and I'm going to use that word a few times, it puts you down the path of being a little bit more likely to succeed than to not succeed.
Right. And it brings us into, I mean, design trends are always a part of it. You know, we might add other layers to that, but they will always also define trend as well.
Design trends, they're, right now, they're about evolution, not revolution. We want trends. Consumers want trends to last longer. So you'll see mid-century, if you, when you saw the way mid-century modern evolved, normally that would have been a very short trend, but because of when it happened, we wanted things to last longer, you started seeing it just keep lasting and lasting and making little adjustments to it rather than a door slamming on it at the end of a particular season.
So as a, I'll ask the question that everyone can see right now, how do we connect all these dots?
Dawn, no.
We ask. I creatively put it together, but we ask a lot of our resources, some of them in our in this room today, some of them industry experts that we work with. I have a few of them just on this screen right now, and that's just a handful. We heard from all of them. We've asked them to define trend. We've had conversations with them all. You know, we have Lee Eisman, the director of Pantone Color Institute.
She's amazing.
Her color trends you will hear in the later keynote as well. So we won't, you know.
Joe Derichowski is on the
also
list as well. He'll be up next to
the
next as well, too.
But yet, we have Michelle Lamb as well, and she's, I believe, here with us.
And each
well.
Of them is an expert yes. in a different field and to a different degree. So, but what you know, Lee Eisman, you'll see her today in her color trends. We were talking to her about does a color trend end? What do you do about when the season's over? Do we stop doing the color of the year for last year? And her answer was absolutely not. You'll notice they don't do a strict, they'll do, give you a color of the year, but in their palettes, they'll show broad variances of that color.
And I think it is really important. When we were even starting this project, it was really important for us to understand, you know, we don't live in a vacuum. We don't live, you know, we're seeing what we're seeing at the global markets. We intuitively are understanding trend, but it really takes getting the insight from everyone else to really make this a true tool. On that note, mission improbable.
Yeah.
Did we really do 9 of these things last year?
Oh. We meant to do just how many?
Gosh.
This started out as a project to do.
We thought it was going to be one.
They're going to give you a little look back at how we divided what we saw, how we took what we saw and created these design portfolios out of them. So I'll let you guys kind of talk about how it got rolling.
Yeah, we call it a marriage of vision and mission. I think it was our marriage.
Yeah.
Over
so
the
much
last
more
year,
about you than
but
I ever wanted
it was such a learning curve for us to, you know, again, we kind of thought out the gate we would create this kind of really great tool, really great Bible, so to speak, of what we were seeing and put it out there. It quickly took on a mind of its own. It took on a life of its own. The natural, talk a little bit, Tom, when we kind of spoke about breaking this out into the portfolios, they're very meaningful.
Right. We wanted, at the beginning and end of everything was it has to be actionable. I mean, you know, we said we want people to be able to look at something and say, okay, this feels like me or who I want to be. This does not feel like me, but you know, the idea of being able to look at something and say and use it as an inspiration and not as a direction. So, you know, we said, somebody asked me once, well, how do you know if these trends are from, how do I know if they're for me or not? And if you don't look at these and immediately say, yeah, that's who my customer is, or that's not who my customer is, then you don't know enough about your customer. It should be intuitive. You'll look at these and you'll say, that's not where I am. You know, and a lot of times, there's so much land grabbing going on right now at retail. So you've got drug chains who want to carry home merchandise. You've got hardware stores wanting to bring in more trend product. And this helps you understand sort of what they're all seeing and how they might, when we pass this out to the industry, we see this as helping them integrate other categories and integrate home and house.
Right, we tend to see trend myopically sometimes by mistake. We have 9 portfolios here, but they are not in silos. Product and trend intersect with one another, and wellness is a good example. There's so many products that we can kind of call wellness, but they might work into All About Ease. They might work into material. They might work into the great outdoors. So there is this thread of connection that goes through all these trends, and you should see them that way. And sometimes 1, 2, 3 becomes, you can add them together, and they become the opportunity that makes the most sense for your given customer base.
So what we really want to do today is there are 9 portfolios. We're not going to go through all 9 of them in exhaustion. The goal is really for you to, we're going to go through kind of where we started with the trends last year when we came out with it. We're also going to help you with very actionable tools of taking this to the aisles. You're at the show right now. We're going to help you kind of take a look at what you should be kind of keeping your eye on as it relates to these trends. We're also going to be showing you where each of these are kind of going into the future. A quick snapshot, by no means exhaustive. We're actually just now starting it and getting it kind of ready to roll out in May. So we are going to go through 5 of them as kind of a quick overview as we go through.
Let me just ask a quick question. Yeah. Show of hands. How many here are retailers? How many manufacturers? Excellent. Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. First portfolio is actually the Great Entertainers, which is very apropos because entertaining, at-home entertaining, we've been talking a lot about it. We talk a lot about how 8 out of 10 consumers are planning to entertain in this coming year. So we have been covering a lot of that on the show floor and products that also answer to that. So,
and as we were putting this together, one of the things that Dawn kept saying is, you know, I would buy this if I was a gift store. I would buy this if I, you know, so it's looking at things and saying, you don't have to be a tabletop store to be in the entertaining business. You know, we really do a lot of grab and go.
Let me just remind you that this session will be posted on the IHA website shortly after this show. Homepage News will include this session as well. And if you go to Homepage News, you can actually see the portfolios that from which we are pulling some of this stuff. Just want to make you feel that you'll have access to all the information you're getting today.
Yeah, and actually at the end there is a QR code that you'd be able to access. We'll leave it up there for you and you can get all portfolios all in one website on Homepage News. So our Great Entertainers, you can see that there's personas assigned to all of them. This was just a very natural way to kind of define who our consumer is as an entertainer. We have the artist, the contemporist, the naturalist, postmodernist, traditionalist, and of course the great gifter. Giving your hostess a gift is very on trend right now as well. So going through all of them, we're not going to go through all of these as well. I think we're going to start with the artist. It's sort of the one person. We all know these people. They bring people into their homes. They have statement pieces. It's a personal connection to the home that they have and the housewares and how they entertain as well. So you see, I mean, all these products have like the faces. They're very kind of, you know,
it's crafted. It's very creative. Maybe. It's very, you know, it's very expressive.
I would have these pieces in my home.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the just a quick snapshot of the contemporist. And the contemporist is just, it's clean materials, clean finishes. We're starting to see a lot of warming of this, so you're seeing a lot of woods being pulled into this this look, but it's very refined.
The interesting thing, when we were doing this last year, there was a discussion, are we gonna feature just new, brand new products that have not come to market before? But the reality of it is, trend is evolutionary more than it's revolutionary. A product that has been around for a couple years can be renewed, and the spirit of it can be sort of rekindled by adapting it to
super important point. Don't shy away from things because they're new, because trend right now is about, it's not about what's new, it's about what's now. It's about relevance, it's about resonance, it's about how does this make me feel? You know, so there are things that you may not have touched in a while, there are things that may have been in the market for a while. I'm not a salesman, I'm not here to help to sell you anything. But we want familiarity. And those help, you know, things that have been there for a while create a sense of ease and comfort and certainty when you're building assortments for people. So take a look at designs that you may have done before, bring back things that have been successful. The whole Barbie thing, it didn't win because it was a great movie, I'll tell you that. It was about the fact that Barbie resonated with us. It hit that sort of comfort button. And so, you know, that is exactly the way to look at your businesses. How are you hitting that thing that just makes people say, oh, I remember that? You know, and that's nostalgia is a big part of what happened.
And it is why I refuse to get rid of all my corduroy bell-bottom pants from the late 70s and early 80s.
I'm not getting rid of my partner.
One note, you'll notice that what you're seeing up here, these are actually the representations of the portfolios that are truly in the Insight Index. So they're kind of in spread form, they're long. They're very visual, that's very purposeful. So when we started this, it was kind of almost like a coffee table book where it was a vision board. We were trying to create just really quick visual snapshots of bringing this trend to life and helping you see it in product and those product displays. We don't put a lot of context in there, except for some of the other ones when we get into the further ones that might have to do with materials and recycling and that type of thing. But just a note, that's why you're not really seeing a lot of context. You're supposed to be able to see it visually and understand how that trend really translates.
But a sneak peek, we're going to try to bring some more of that B2B context as we go into the next generation. We realize the pictures are important, the presentation's important. But the more we can connect that to the B2B opportunity, that's the objective at the end of the day, is to help suppliers and retailers make more informed decisions.
Also, this format lets us bring you stuff from the show floor. You'll see a lot of show floor photos that it lets us, without having to take things in the studio and gather all these perfect shots, it lets us take you, you know, we can go from show to straight to the... to you.
So as promised, this is the Great Entertainers, and we're going to help you kind of take this to the aisles. So in the first one, if you want to talk through the clean aspect, because there's kind of three parts of the Great Entertainers that we'll walk through a little bit.
So, you know, I mean, clean lines, clean materials, sleek, shiny, just about design. I mean, it's about, we want things clean. Then crafted, you know, this idea of handwork going into it, no piece exactly the same. We want pieces, you know, that show that they were made by someone.
Yeah, you'll see a lot of just handmade feelings to a lot of the products out there as well.
And color is important. Color is, you know, and not by any, you know, it's any color, it's every color. It's the color that's right for your customer. It's, but having making color statement is really important because it's very mood lifting.
So new and next for entertaining, what can we anticipate? We've talked a lot about charcuterie boards and the evolution of charcuterie boards.
Yeah, I know a lot of people. Thank God butter boards were like in and out,
because
that's just disgusting. But the idea of charcuterie is really evolving, and it's not going away, but you're seeing it move into less meats and cheese and all of that, and really, first, lots of healthy, you know, so fruits, vegetables, a lot of holiday themes.
And they're not just wood boards anymore. They take it on different shapes for different holidays and that type of thing. So a lot of different materials as well. Speaking of materials, it brings us into material evidence. So materials is really about materials matter, right? There's interesting material introductions, the combination and contrasts. Think of glass paired with felt. It's really interesting and unique material combinations that we're seeing out there as well. And when we get into
the language
stuff,
of the high end is, you know, mono materials are kind of OPP, you know, but when you want to send a message about things being...
The consumer is more tuned into the materials that go into their products in all aspects of consumer life than they ever have been. So having a strong message, no matter which direction you go in material, having a strong message about the products, materials, how it was made, where those materials were sourced, the safety and efficacy of those materials. That's tell the consumer that story. They can find that information much more easily than they could have earlier.
And Peter's use of the word story is really important. Tell a story and give the retailers a way to tell a story, whether it's a plaque that they can put by it, whether it's a hang tag that talks about the provenance and the craftsmanship and, you know, or the eco position. Product has to tell a story. That's what it's a part of the selling now. So, and also multiple use. You're seeing a lot of mixed materials, so that if you look at the center of the page right now, these are, you know, they're serving bowls, but it also, you can store it by putting this cork on top. You can use the cork as a trivet. You can use the cork as a serving platter. Okay. So just this idea of multi-use, multi-function.
There was a line in there about environmentally responsible or sustainable. Mm-hmm. Be careful if you're going to use those words. Make sure you mean it and can prove it. The consumer is going to figure you out real quickly.
From a manufacturing perspective and a vendor perspective, one of the big things right now is making sure people don't just want to hear that you're doing it. They want numbers. They want to know, okay, so how many jobs were saved by this? How many trees were saved? They want to show that it's not just that you have a mission to do it. Now they're starting to want results. They want some, you know, so building that into your story.
I think my biggest takeaway from material evidence and what it's looking like coming into the future, we've talked a lot about this, is the idea of the disassembly. So you're having multiple different products or materials put together in different products, but then to recycle them or to you have them be sustainable, you take them apart and individual parts are also sustainable. We're seeing that a lot of cookware, bakeware, but also in a lot of other materials as well, a lot of other products as well.
It's the end of life. End of life matters on these products a whole lot more.
And also coming down the road, we saw a lot in Europe. You're going to start seeing a lot in the industry is new materials, especially new plastics, vegetal plastics. So plastics that have no plastic in them. there are some really great new technologies, so expect that. And everybody is going to have a material story. That's important.
All about ease. We are all talking about convenience and ease of use. I think it's over 50% of people say yep. Ease of use is their
is
number,
the number one,
purchase one
driver
decision.
For their yep. purchase. You know, so we always say, save me time, save me space, save me money.
Yep.
In that order. Time is the commodity right now.
And ease of use is all around kind of solving a problem as well. You know, in your home and housewares, you want products that kind of do multifunction. That's a problem solved. So you look at some of these products that we saw, you'd see the Dash Mandolin, that it's safer. You can't cut your hand on it. You have the board on the left that has, it's all kind of fits into one, so you have safer storage, better storage in your home. That's all we're seeing as well.
That sense of organization, storage and organization became really important during the pandemic because we were crammed into a place together. And so there's a new, like, and if you go on Instagram, you'll see, like, my ideal fridge. You'll see people tricking out the insides of their refrigerators to, also leftovers are going to become a big story. So we're seeing storage grow, in terms of the way, you know, what people are paying attention to.
This category is a good place to talk about how trend is.
Pardon me.
Very rarely revolutionary, it's often evolutionary. And the core trend may be home organization or the core theme, but home organization ebbs and flows. What it means in 2024 may be very different than what it means in 2026 and 2025 might be that transition. So you're gonna hear a lot of the same types of trends as we put together insight. We may name them a little differently, we may name them the same, but they may mean something very different a year later. And that's what one of the things we'll do with insight going forward is kind of help kind of take you on that journey through the evolution of a trend.
Dylan said something yesterday, and it really brought things to a point, and that was a lot of what we do in housewares now we do in front of people. And also, we don't want things to feel like chores anymore. So beauty and design is a part of this whole thing. You'll notice that a lot of the really great new housewares are things that you do in front of people. You know, you're not prepping alone, and you want to have some fun with it. You want it to be designed right.
Yeah, and you're entertaining with your guests at your home. You're doing the prep actually in their presence as well.
Good example here, the tools in green at the bottom, normally they're gonna get thrown into a cabinet, no one's gonna see them again. This gives you an option of kind of showcasing them now, and all of a sudden that collection of tools looks kind of cool, and people are now very proud of something more than they might have been earlier.
Displaying them. Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of products I'm actually seeing that are doing just that. They're keeping it so the mess is off the counter, but also just okay to display out for you. So what's next in ease?
We're calling it carefree and guilt-free because the idea is that we want to, you're gonna be seeing new technologies. We basically want to, things that clean up easier, things that are that don't require so much cleaning, minimize waste and minimize mess. Those are the two new focuses, it's about waste and mess. I want cleanup to be fast, or not at all, and I want to make less of a mess that I have to clean up afterwards, and also waste 40% of 40% of produce in the United States goes into landfills, just gets wasted. So how do I stop that? How do I store things, make them last longer?
So we've hit the design and material trends part of the presentation because we did have to address that. You know, a lot of the other trends are lifestyle trends and everything else, but the fine lines is really goes into and leans into more of the design element of trend.
Barn entertaining, still a real focus. What's happened is that the restaurant business has gone back towards sort of molecular mixology. They're doing more complex cocktails and leaving a lot of the accessible, doable things to the home bar person. So how do we, and also a lot of consumers are saying, you know what, I just want a cocktail at the end of the day and I want to treat myself a little bit special. So it's not just about entertaining, it's about self-purchases too.
I think we're also at a point now where for a while we were willing to spend a lot of time kind of being the home mixologist.
Mm-hmm.
But now we want that experience, but we need it to be a little easier, a little bit
faster,
simpler.
Yeah. And also, there have been a lot of advances in borosilicates and in magnesium usage that are making glass more durable, but still fine. So you'll see a lot more fine, thin things for everyday use.
This is my favorite spread of the entire thing. Give me some coffee right about now.
First of all, before we start, coffee. Yeah. That's going to be on every insight between now and probably 2050 right now. So it's a good example of a product, a trend that really isn't so new, but it has a very different feel to it right now.
But you also take a look at the Mr. Coffee on here. I mean, what you think of before is Mr. Coffee was a single serve, something you sit on their counter and you make a brew pot of coffee. Now they're getting into the game of having iced coffee and a little bit more crafted coffees. They understand the value that they can bring as well in that space.
Whether it's coffee or tea, look for creating experiences. Look for creating things that we used to buy outside. I mean, that Mr. Coffee machine is a great example. We used to buy it outside, but now we're taking it into the home. If we wanted a really great herbal tea, we went down, to wherever our coffee and tea house was. Now we're bringing it home. Anything that is outside, whether it's the way you treat, the way you pour a beer, all of it, bring it in and help people create it at home.
Yeah,
tea is also super important. Just keep in mind.
Years ago, when cold brew as a coffee shop product was coming out, I made a projection that we will see cold brew home brewers and in the appliance business. And a coffee maker company looked at me and said, are you kidding? How are we going to do that?
Yeah, not possible.
Someone figured it out. That's the point. That this the direct connection from that experience over there is going to be brought to the home, and it's going to come a lot quicker, or it needs to come a lot quicker because the consumer expects it a lot quicker.
Teas are going to build really fast.
Yep.
Teas are associated with wellness. They're going to that trend is going to build really, really fast. It's still building. So.
What I love about the evolution, I think, of where Fine Lines is going is your concept of beautility and that these functional items are really have a decorative element around them, and people want to put them out. I mean, think of the utensils that people set out. It's functional, but it's also easy on the eyes. People want to put them out, and they don't mind putting them out. They'll choose colors accordingly.
Some of the pieces we were seeing in Europe, like this piece you see on the lower left, this is something that you serve on, but it's like you prep on it, you serve on it, and it's as, everything is, the warming kettle is at the top right. Yeah, there are things that what's coming is everything has to have a decorative value. Everything has to be countertop worthy.
And whether it's hidden or not, the functionality of it, can be put away or hidden or not. We've hit the great outdoors, which today it's cold and I have no desire to be out there, but everyone is going out there in full force. We are taking entertaining from our homes into the outdoors at record levels, I think. It's just become we're bringing the inside out. There's a lot of products that you see that actually transition from indoors to outdoor entertaining. Think pizza ovens, even from shelving units and that type of thing. So you have it. Maybe it's on displaying some food on the inside, but you use it on the outside to display plates and napkins and the like. So you kind of adjust for it. The grill master. And
it's thinking across the experience. You can go to the next one. But I mean, grilling is super important, but it's thinking across the experience. And this piece on the far right called the hedgehog dryer, it's just amazing. It looks about this big. And each of those tubes, you plug it in, or you can charge it and take it with you. It has a 10-hour charge. Each of those tubes is a fan, and it will dry gloves, it'll dry boots, it'll dry anything that you get wet while you're skiing. But the idea is to really think of solutions and problems across the experience and create into those things.
Again, I think this one kind of leads into the fact that people are really embracing their outdoor entertaining. It's not just, I think we were talking the other day, like when my dad used to pull out the grill, it would be like a process. It would be, oh my gosh, we can't eat for like 12, it's the charcoal and the everything else. It is about bringing that experience. People come over for the grilling now. It's not just something that's happening on the outside and you bring the food in. You're making the food outside and eating it outside and entertaining that way.
The backyard badass, that whole thing is about, we all have that friend, you go over to their place, and it's like everything seems easy. It's like, how come when I do this, it's such a strain? I'm always running around, and you're like, so what can you do to make that experience easier? What can you make from beginning to end?
Again, ease.
How can you be more participating in your own experience?
One thing to point out as we're on outdoor living, but it applies to some of the other trends you saw. There is a derivative of the pandemic in a lot of these trends. These are behaviors that were sort of enabled and intensified during the pandemic. Outdoor living is a good example. Wellness is a good example. But they are also example of behaviors that sort of stuck. They're different, they're going to evolve differently, but they're not dissipating. And we don't see evidence of these things dissipating. Maybe we aren't cooking as many meals at home as we were, but what we learned to do during the pandemic and how we learned to cook, how we learned to embrace our outdoor space, that stuff continues. And it creates a wonderful foundation for innovation, not only in the product that you are marketing, but in the message that you're telling.
I think it speaks to your connecting of the dots that you brought up in the beginning, because all of these things, you see, you hear a lot of our repeat words. It's about ease, it's about wellness. All of these are interlocking with each other. So I think it's about finding those products that can do that, can cross multiple, check off more than one box. The Great Outdoors, where we're going next.
You're gonna see style just keep moving outdoors. We expect the same type of experience outside that we have inside. So, color, style, forget paper plates. We're moving into, melamine is certainly advancing in that way. You're seeing a lot more of that. But the type, we want bar carts that move outside. And part of this whole trend is also, the outdoors is about camping and glamping and jogging, and it's about people who do a lot, it's hiking, it's biking, it's all of those things that you can take with you. It's about really healthy living as much as it is about the outdoors. So, in the insight, here's printing off half of it, but
that was the coffee table book we decided not to print. So,
when you look at these volumes, in this particular one, you're going to see a lot also about outdoor activities. But casual comfort, quick cleanup. I don't want it to be something that I can just do on the weekend is get outside. I want to be able to do it during the week. I want things that help me, drink and serve and do everything outdoors that I do indoors quickly and easily.
So I know we went through that a lot, very actually quickly for the amount of content that we have within Insight. Here is a QR code. You can get to the homepage news landing page that has all of our portfolios on there. And again, we only showed you a couple pages from each one. So please take a look. I think there's a wealth of information in there. This is just a capture of all nine of those portfolios. And if you have any?
Well, I wanted to say something. And we'd love to get your feedback as you get through these. Please feel free to send us emails and tell us, you know, what you think. But one of the things that we did in here was we chose product from all markets, but we didn't get into a lot of selling. You know, it's like all you see is the vendor name, that's it. You see the who makes it, and you can go and find them yourself. Because we find that a lot of retailers and manufacturers, they're not readers, okay? We don't like sit there and read all about a product. If you're interested in it, you're gonna go find it. You know, so, but if, and as Peter said, you know, this year we're gonna be putting in more information about consumers. Yeah. So
I am gonna turn over the Q&A session to my colleague, Mike Duff over here. He's the host of the Inspiration Theater. I'm taking a tour over to the next room to get ready for the next session. Tom and Dawn can stick around and answer some questions right now. So thanks very much, everyone. We'll see you real soon.
And does anyone have any questions? Aha.
You've always got a question.
I know. I don't know if I'll stump you again.
Always the one who asks me a question I can't answer.
I think earlier you mentioned a TikTok trend about the ideal fridge.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on it?
It's sort of become a thing where people are, and actually Leanne Schwarzkopf is here, and she was the one who brought it to my attention, where people are tricking out the drawers in their fridge and showing how much you can get into a fridge and how organized it can be so that it's not just this morass of like, the last time you shopped and you just took it all and shoved it in there, it's almost become a competitive thing where people are showing all the things they do. So that means food storage. There's been a lot of how do I make food last longer? And also very much what do I, leftovers are gonna be a big topic coming up because they cut down on waste and the percentage of households that actually eat leftovers is immense. So, but this idea of food storage and also products that help you make, you know, you make it, you bake it, you serve it, and you store it in the same product. The more steps you can take out of things, the more people, it's all about ease, you know, so.
Is the refrigerator becoming the new pantry?
No, let's put it this way. Storage, the improved storage has brought new attention to pantries. So you're gonna see like the aspirational pantry, like the perfect organization of dry goods. And if you just go on and just Google the perfect pantry, and you'll see that a lot of the shelter magazines are talking about building pantries as part of your kitchen, as opposed to just finding a closet somewhere, like I'm going to the garage and get a can of soup.
Right, it's part of the actual planning.
Yeah.
And interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom.
Sure.
Hi. Can you hear me? Good. Yeah. I'm an industrial designer by trade, and I'd love to know, so from the starting process of developing a concept, are there principles that you would say to keep in mind for that longevity, so that as you're taking in trends that will influence the design of that product, knowing that the development process, you know, can take maybe a year and a half from concept to hitting the shelves,
right.
What are some principles that you would recommend for those core trends or those more lasting trends, so that when you do enter, you're still relevant? That makes sense.
Amazing question. Actually, thinking that far ahead.
and right after that, I'll give you the cure for cancer. I think multifunction is the future. Buying less and having it do more is the ideal, because multifunction does more than. First, it gives you feel like you're getting more for your dollar, but it also saves space. The other thing is, you know, the best product design almost takes the end consumer out of the equation. You know, when you look at where vacuums have gone, the idea went from, you know, being vacuuming while I'm away to now I don't even have to empty it anymore. To all these, you know, so and the same thing with coffee and tea is going in the same direction, where it's like. How can I help people do less? How, you know, whether it's
removing friction.
Yeah, avoid friction, and ergonomics are getting a lot more attention now too, because the largest consumer market is getting old. When you look at boomers, boomers start now at 60 years old, 59, I think. So that means that you're dealing with a lot of ergonomic issues, a lot of reduced strain. So I think that those are probably the three biggest things, is reduced strain, multifunction, and weight has become such an important thing, because for boomers, weight used to mean value. Mm-hmm. If it's heavy and it's good and heavy, then it's a better product. It's not the case anymore. And materials are helping us make things lighter and easier to handle.
Thank you.
During COVID, obviously, there's a lot of germophobia, and for household goods where there might be multiple touch points with multiple people, is that trend slowing down? Are people getting less scared of products that are touched by multiple people?
Yes. Yeah, it really is. And again, I'm talking real world, okay? If you're trying to look for things to make you scared, there are certainly plenty of them. But when you look at social media and you look across the landscape of what people are doing, this whole idea of charcuterie boards that are an entire table, or these, like nachos, like table nachos, where they're just taking chips and pouring them down a table and everybody's grabbing and going. It's the real world. That type of phobia is not sustainable. Not only is it not sustainable, it's not desirable. During the pandemic and just after, we saw a lot of individual portions and things like that. Now we're just seeing a more casual approach to things. We want to get back to normal, and I think that's why charcuterie boards are getting bigger. You're seeing all the aspirational ones. They're getting bigger, and we go and we all grab from the same thing. I mean, nobody wants double dipping, of course, but I would say that's less of a concern. Where it's more of a concern is in storage. We want things to last longer, and we're not used to things like food huggers. Dawn loves food huggers, and so do I. It's a brand, you have to look at them. But they're all about, everything from your butter to your to a grapefruit.
Avocado.
To avocados. They're about keeping things fresh, and it's a great brand, but the real concentration is, how do I make things last longer, and how do I make sure it doesn't go bad in the fridge? We don't want to throw out as much, but we're more concerned about in our household, not socially.
Thank you. I have a question about storage and organization as well. Particularly going through the pandemic, there was a lot of focus on, as rooms were being used for multiple purposes, hiding things, and that more closed storage versus open storage. And as we're coming into post that, and a lot of high design is starting to come into storage and organization. I mean, a bright colored trash can or something definitely stands out. How do you feel about that, managing and designing products for hiding things versus showing things in that storage kind of space?
I think collapsibility is directional in storage. Things that can go away when you're not using them. So we're seeing a lot more collapsible storage. When you want it, it's there. The other thing is decorative storage. And
I was going to mention that, because I think there's some of the cabinets that you can put shoes in, and you can put other things in, and then you close it, and you wouldn't even know. It looks like an end table. So I think there's a lot of that. I think of when kids would go to college, and you'd have to hide things in small spaces. I think we're there again in our normal day-to-day lives, but we want it to look nicer. So instead of having the baskets that are open and overflowing, we want it contained, but then we want to maybe put a lamp on top of it, because we want to be able to hide it.
There's a section in one of these called Get It Together, and we really sort of hit on that. It's almost like, look, storage is going to be there. We need it. So instead of trying to pretend that I don't stick a bunch of stuff on top of the soffit, I'm going to make good-looking containers to put it up there and have it just be obvious. And if you go to some of the real winners like the Container Store, you really see decorative storage is leading. you know, the tub business. You can get tubs at any price, and it's fine to put stuff in your garage and throw a label on it. But we want stuff more accessible than stacking things in the garage. So, you know, that's decorative is first, and storage that collapses and doesn't take up.
Yeah, I also look at Brabantia, what they're doing with some of their trash cans.
Stop it.
We get really passionate about this stuff, but Brabantia, and they're beautiful garbage cans.
They look like furniture.
Never thought I would say those two words together, but
it's amazing. It looks like a side table, and then you hit it on top, and it opens.
Their colors, they're colorful, and that type of thing. So they're not hiding it. You know, it's a very functional, utilitarian type thing, and letting it out on display for all.
Yep.
So I think they're.
Good morning. I was just curious how demographics were considered in these portfolios. For example, I'm not sure I see a lot of Gen Z in some of these trends.
The trends that we talk about are, these are really reflections of what's coming in the market, like what we've seen. So it's more than, we're speaking into the different generations, but these are market reports. So we went to Paris, London, Milan, Tokyo, Frankfurt, Stockholm, and what we're, one of the reasons, well, I'm really glad you asked that, because one of the reasons we created Insight was a lot of buyers, a lot of manufacturers, we can't go to every market, you know? So we wanted to say, you know what? We're supposed to be an industry leader, so let's lead, and let's bring the markets to you where we can and show you what's out there. So a lot of times, those right now are not necessarily directed to Gen Z, because Gen Z does not have a lot of disposable income. They're not always living on their own, they're more of an OPP concern. You know, they're really buying opening price point product. It's not that that's bad, but as they get to the age where they're spending and they're owning, and then you can expect them to want products that last longer and that don't get thrown away, and that we have seen in here. The fact that you're seeing a lot of products that are, based in, sustainable plastics, bioplastics, sustainable materials like wood, water hyacinth, rattan, things like that, that definitely speaks to Gen Z.
And do check out the rest of the portfolios. Again, this was a pretty small snapshot compared to what is in the full, robust offering as well.
No, I'm just curious because I think it said it was 22. Sorry. I think your portfolio, when you broke down the demographics, said like 22 or 28% of consumers were Gen
22.
Z or something. Yeah.
And they're a large part of the consumer, but understand that in terms of business, Gen Z's power, like millennials, is in their influence, not in their pocket. And so they're going home from school, and they're sharing with their friends, and they're sharing on social, they're sharing with their parents. This is not an acceptable behavior. Stop buying all that stuff stop not recycling. Stop, why are you buying that pot and pan that's going to last only this long? So their power is in their influence, and their influence is what's showing up in product. So, that's kind of, and as they grow older, just like millennials, it's so funny, we were talking about millennials and the fact that we all kind of in our heads see them as, as school age, does anybody want to volunteer? What percentage of millennial debt do you think is education related?
80?
Huh? Yep. Everybody's somewhere between 50 and 80. It's only 17%. Millennials are experienced junkies, okay, which is great because we can help them, we can bring them to new experiences, but we tend to think of them as young, and I just wanted to bring it up because they're consumers now. So they're being influenced by Gen Z very strongly. Gen Z, when it comes to grocery, 93% of people with Gen Z kids say that Gen Z affects what they buy at the grocery store. So when you look at that, we want to pay attention to them, but it's what the product that their influence creates rather than the product that they buy.
Any other? One more.
I understand a lot of this is about it changes over time.
Yeah.
I think you said evolution in your presentation. Which of these do you expect to evolve less in the short term versus more? Because I'm sure some of these will be stickier. Yeah.
Somebody always asks that question, like, which is the real big one? Look, you know, Dawn said something about being able to check off boxes, and that really, it's when you look at it intuitively, you see two things that have crossed all of these trends. One of them is environmental and sustainability concerns. And when we talk about sustainability, if you haven't heard the phrase ESG, environment, social, and governance, take a look at it. ESG is extremely important because the way we're looking at sustainability now is not just about environmental sustainability, but about sustainable behaviors, sustainable cultural behaviors, making sure that people get, you know, so you're gonna see a lot more products that talk into sustaining culture, sustaining local workforces and things like that. This idea of responsibility, we were amazed at the numbers between this year and last year, because the value equation index that we released yesterday was a national survey. We saw a 20% increase in the number of people who said that social and environmental concerns affected the purchases that they made in home and housewares. So everybody, you should be, a year from now, there should not be a person out there that doesn't have, you know, that isn't showing some sort of social or environmentally responsible product. It doesn't have to be all of it, but you have to take a position. So, you know, I'd say that's enduring is tethering yourself to what people care about, you know, whether that's environmental. And then the other thing is always going to be save me time, give me time to live. And everybody wants that work-life balance, you know. Yeah. So, that's probably the biggest thing.
Yeah, I get a kick out of the fact that, as a point of kind of differentiation, leftovers used to be bad. Now they're virtuous.
Yeah.
Who'd have thunk that? If there's no other questions,
thank you all for
wrap
staying
up.
So
thank
late.
You all for attending.
Tom Marabi,
thank our
everyone.
Thank our panelists.
Sir, answered.